Time to tune in to the podcast with wise words, glasses on, ears open. Many things you'll learn from industry leaders and permobile experts. Welcome to the point of view of the wheelchair nerds. Extra, extra.
Be the hammer.
You're listening to something great.
I'm great.
You finally arrived at the place. You're sitting with the
wheel. Welcome to Wheelchair Nerds, a podcast to connect and inform people who utilize, prescribe, and provide seating and wheel mobility equipment. I'm your host, Angie Kiger. Before we jump into today's topic, a brief reminder that the information in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended to be medical, billing, or legal advice. Now, let's get to it. Hey, wheelchair nerds, welcome back. Another episode here in season 3, kicking off. Today, we're going to talk about manual wheelchair customizations, but customizations to a whole new level as far as I'm concerned. As a clinician, one of the things that I can tell you that I used to annoy the providers with who would come through our clinic and some of the manufacturers representatives that would come through is I was famous for taking a kiddo, putting them in a chair, and using a receiving blanket or whatever I could grab, quite honestly, to get them positioned exactly the way I wanted. Take a picture of that setup, and I would give it to the ATP or the ATP slash provider and or the manufacturer's rep and say, it's time to order this kiddo a chair, and we need it to look exactly like this. And then many times folks would say, we don't have medical tape. We don't use receiving blankets for customization. So, you know, we're going to have to figure this out, Angie. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. Figure it out. So I'm excited because on this podcast today, we have literally one of the folks who I would say happily enjoys challenges like me from back when I was in a clinic. I've known Ken for a number of years, known of him even before I joined Permobile. He's a legend in the tie light world. I know he gets a little embarrassed when we talk about that. So super excited to have a tie light legend on here. But of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't shout out to Hawken and ask Hawken real quick. Hawken, what are you excited about for this guest that we have before we introduce him officially?
Yeah, I'm really excited to have Ken on the show. I'm mainly curious about just knowing what there is out there. I think sometimes you don't really know what can be customized until you hear what has been done before. So I'm really looking forward to hearing some of those stories.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome. So, Ken, can you give us your 30-second elevator pitch if someone was coming to you and be like, Ken Winward, who are you? What do you do?
And as you, it's really hard to talk about me, so let me give it a shot here. Been with Tie Light for almost 25 years. This December will be my quarter century mark. I've held many positions here at Tie Light. Before Permobile acquisition does and afterwards. I've been everywhere from quality to production VP to customer experience to trainer. And to be quite honest with you, I love everything about manual wheelchair work that we do, because everywhere we go, we learn more and more of the stuff that I never knew of before. And I've been at this for a while, and someone will always come to us, Angie, with a question. Can you do this? And it's like, yeah, I think we can. Let's start drawing on a napkin and getting this worked out. And I literally have on my wall behind my screen drawings of, hey, look, we want it to look like this. And we made it official. I have three great designers that use SolidWorks and CAD and other drafting programs. I'm going to call out their first names right quick. It's Brian, Evan, and Mike. They are amazing at basically translating text into 2D drawings that our fabricators and assemblers will then create a 3D rendition of. And I love when it comes from napkin to, hey, we're shipping it today. Let's go out and take a picture. So those are that's what it is. Every day is new. There's not a day that I'm not waking up going, it's just going to be the same old, same old. I haven't done a cookie cutter day here, I don't think, ever. So
that's awesome.
That was more than 30 seconds, wasn't it?
That's all right. I love it. 25 years of getting to understand wheelchairs. I have to ask, I know you personally, I know you're ambulatory, I know you know a lot of folks that use wheelchairs, but what attracted you to working in a company like Tylight that manufactures wheelchairs?
You know, it is a funny story. Initially, this was only going to be a 3-month job. Moved from Seattle to the east side of Washington State, where the rattlesnakes and the tumbleweeds grow big. And I said, okay, well, I'm just going to do this job for a little while, and then I'm going to go and clean up the old Hanford reservation of its nuclear waste, and had a job lined up and everything. And so this temporary job, one day I was invited to go to a med trade back in the day down in California. And I can't remember if it was Long Beach or if it was Anaheim. Anyway, down in California. And I was sent there to basically build the gigantic juggernaut of a booth that we had back then, because it was nothing but wrenching and balancing and zip tying to get this booth to look good. And I was told that I could stay for the show as long as I didn't do anything stupid. And so my boss said that to me. He said, oh, cool, I will do that. So I kind of stood in the back. And we had what we called a keychain TR, which was this itty bitty little chair that was just for a display where you could just put it somewhere. So we had zip tied on this this little table. And a lady came by in a stroller with her kid in the stroller and said, hey, do you have something that would fit my kid? He's going to school next year for the first time. And, you know, I would like to get this kiddo to be able to have something other than the stroller. I said, sure. And so I looked around, boss wasn't looking. I snipped the zip ties, pulled that little chair off, put the kiddo in it. And mom and I were talking, we turned around, the kid was gone. And I got really nervous because, you know, I was doing something stupid, obviously. I wasn't not knowing what that definition was. I think that was one of those times, because I lost a chair and I lost a kid all in one fell swoop. And we start looking around, and we look over, and that kid figured out how to be ambulatory for the first time ever. He had never self-propelled anywhere. And he was over by the drinking fountain trying to get a drink of water. We were right up against the wall. And the lady starts crying. This is the first time he's been anywhere by himself. I started getting a little teary-eyed. Going, oh, thank goodness we found the chair. And between those two things, it dawned on me, hey, what you're doing has purpose. It has something that is beyond just creating a cookie cutter item that is for the masses. It is for one person. That made to measure idea is where it spoke to my heart. I don't know what else to say. I mean, I get goosebumps every time I tell that story, because yeah, I was happy I found the chair, but that was one of those paradigm shifts in my life where, you know, I did get teary-eyed. I did sit there and say, oh, this is where you can make a difference, Ken. So I canceled my other job lined up, and I said, I think I'm gonna keep it this and not take off. So creating a chair, and each one of those chairs for a soul, so that chair has a soul, is how I became enthralled and converted to, hey, this is your mission in life. So that's why I'm here.
I love it. I love it. And you still carry that with you today. Before we started recording, I was saying to Ken, I was like, I can't wait to see you this weekend. we are recording this in late April of 2025, and we are headed it's a short jaunt for me, Ken. It's just 3.5-hour drive up 95.
Really?
I know it's a big old trip for you. We're headed up to Jersey for the Abilities Expo. And Ken has been one of the mainstays for Permobil for a number of years at the Abilities Expo. So I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that today too. Ken runs the repair booth section or repair section of the manual wheelchairs for Permobil at these shows. And I mean, you can tell just by the end users that know you at these shows that come back to see you every year. You know, hey, Ken, what's up? Even if they don't need service, they'll stop by and chat with you and very much respect your opinions. And my favorite is to watch when they bring their friends over, even if they're not in a brand of a chair that, you know, that's a tie light. They'll bring them over and be like, hey, my buddy's got some questions. While you can't repair it because it's not one of our chairs, you can definitely give some, you know, some insights like, oh, you know, you might want to consider this, might want to consider that. So it's super cool to see. So I love hearing those. I always ask people, what's your why? You know, what brought mm-hmm. you here? And it's easy for someone like me who has a cousin with cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. I don't want to speak for Hawken, but I mean, it's probably Hawken's probably easy for you. People say, why do you work at Permobil? You use a power chair. So mm-hmm. Kind of brought you into this. So.
Yeah. And, you know, I have a daughter who's on the autism spectrum, and it's mm-hmm. Kind of removed from the mobility aspect of things, because she's able-bodied. She can do whatever she would like. She's very high functioning. However, we had some angels in our lives that were able to use their talents to make her get through her schooling. Now she's in college and getting her degree in accounting. And if we wouldn't have those angels helping us, then we wouldn't have got her to that point. And for me, I want to be that angel for someone else. I'm more of a mechanical type guy. So let me throw something out in the universe that is going to be positive for someone else. And that comes around. I think it feeds into, you call it karma, whatever you want. But if you do those things for someone that, you know, that maybe other folks can't, be that angel for them, because I benefited from that. And it's part of life. This is what life should be, you know. Mm-hmm. Life should be kind of a give and take, and just interacting with things that you're really good at and having other people benefit from it is huge. So
yeah, that's a great perspective to have. And I wanted to switch gears a little bit and talk about CMD, Creative Mobility Division, and what you guys do there for those who aren't familiar, because it's pretty cool from what I know so far.
So the Creative Mobility Division is just the basics of what Tylight was built on. We had a person who put the user first in his head, and he made us do that. So the CEO said to us, hey, look, user's going to come first. What do they want? They want this unique thing. Have we ever done it before? No, do it. And so so Tylight was synonymous with creative mobility or customs. Back then, we just called it Tylight. Later, it became its own little program called Designs Unlimited. And we kind of fell away from doing those customs for a while. And it was different. It's not what people expected from us. So I was asked to take it up again. And I said, we're going to have to change the name from Designs Unlimited, because we weren't doing the things that we promised under that moniker. And people were starting to say, oh, Designs Very Limited, huh? Mm-hmm. And so we said, oh, we're going to have to change that name. And so we changed that name to Creative Mobility Division, which is kind of based on the custom vehicle operations of Harley Davidson. They have a CVO, they call it. And so CMD and CVO are kind of the same thing. You need something souped or something special? Yeah, we'll do that for you. Just let us know. Back mm-hmm. in the old days, it was kind of the Wild West. We didn't worry about, is it engineeringly, well, that's a horrible word. Is it, does it fit within engineering guidelines? And does mm-hmm. it fit within our quality guidelines mm-hmm. that we need to do? Back then, it didn't matter. Yeah, we just do it. We made stuff that we should have probably never made back in the day. However, I still see it around. So we did a pretty good job back then. However, from there, we built this Creative Mobility Division that would basically take adaptations to the chair that weren't on the order form and make sure that they were part of within the engineering standards we needed and within the quality standards that we need, and the production could actually do it. So we take a three-prong approach. making sure that before we do something, we have engineering, quality, and productions buy-in before we go forward. What's really cool about this is every Wednesday, if it's something that's not in our catalog, which we'll talk about in a little bit, it's something we present in this committee that we have. And we get so much feedback. It's like, okay, I know the initial idea was this customer. However, we had a better idea, we think. What do you think? And the customer says, oh, that's much better. And it's lighter. Yeah. Okay. Let's do it that way. So for instance, like a seat to footrest, we just recently did. Someone wanted to stack another footrest on top. I said, nah, we're going to modify the front of that frame so that you still get your seat to footrest, yet not have to have that big old bulky aluminum stack that you're asking for. They loved it. And it's like, okay, good. All right. But we still ask, you know, it's mm-hmm. something important. Then from that, we started getting commonalities. Okay, hey, look, this is something that people keep asking for. Oh, we should put that in a catalog. And this published our what the chairs that they will go on and what the limitations are that we can do. However, here's all the different things that you can have with this particular CMD. For instance, we have individual flip-ups on a rigid chair. Who would have thunk that anybody would want individual flip-ups on a rigid chair? Well, you know what? Mm-hmm. Bariatrics want that. Geriatrics want that. Mm-hmm. You know, it is, you know, hemiplegias wants that. You know, mm-hmm. you have to think outside that box. And mm-hmm. I can't create that. That has to be from the voice of the customer. So CMD is real-time relevant innovation that happens from the voice of the customer and happens quick. Mm-hmm. We sit there and we make sure that it's safe. We make sure it's, you know, sound, and we make sure we can actually produce what we say we can. And then we get it done. If we listed all that we could do in, let's say, Easy Tie or on an order form, our order form would be hundreds of pages long. Order forms and Easy Tie are guidelines, mm-hmm. is what I call them. And if you don't see it, ask for it. Let us hear it, because we need that innovation, because eventually that CMD catalog is going to spin off into something that was custom today is tomorrow's standard option. Mm-hmm. So we want to be able to shift that. And then as new stuff comes in, we're going, okay, well, we're pulling this out of the catalog, putting it on the order form, but this is going to replace it in the catalog. And so that's the intent of CMD. It was never that way before, but it is now, because that's what keeps this program going. Mm-hmm. We want to keep it going, because that's what people expect of Tylite out of Pasco. They expect us to be able to take those things that no one else do, and we'll do it.
Absolutely. Well, one of the things that a lot of what you said sparked a few things in me, and I have to follow up, and some of these could be tough questions to answer. If they are, you can definitely, you know, wave the white flag and say, I'm not sure, maybe we'll edit that out, but hopefully we won't have to. But, you know, with the increase in the interwebs, you know, social media and whatnot, we see a lot of customizations mm-hmm. that come out, you know, one-off chairs, smaller companies. Mm-hmm. And I think I want to be clear before I ask this question. I think that I'm not speaking negatively about any other company. But I'm curious as to one of the things you mentioned is that because we are a company that, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but because we, you know, we are a medical device company, follow FDA and all that sort of stuff, there are certain standards, that we must follow. Mm-hmm. What would you say, you know, to somebody who reaches out to you and says, well, but this other company tells me that they can do it. What's the benefit to having standards, you know, as a company, like following those?
You know, and that's the whole thing is my number one goal is never to hurt anybody, mm-hmm. never to create something that is going to either, you know, dump them on the ground or rub them in a way mm-hmm. that makes them have their skin break down or any other pinch points or anything like that. That's what's on our mind. So, you know, safety mm-hmm. first, and then the quality of that. Is it actually going to achieve what's being asked for? If it's mm-hmm. not, then we need to go back to the drawing board. And because I have engineering, because I have quality, and because I have production, I get this brain trust of people coming in going, hey, look, have you thought of, and it's like, no, I didn't. So that's really good that you did that. And because each of those represent a different group that we have to listen to, then I feel better about, okay, it's not just Ken doing this. And in fact, it's not Ken at all. It's just the voice of the customer and I'm the instrument to steer it. Then that's when I can feel good about what we are doing. For a long time, you know, people said, oh, you know, Tylite doesn't do customs anymore. And it's like, yeah, we do, you know, come give us a shot. I mean, there's stuff that we produce we never thought we would, but we had to make sure that it was safe and of the quality that is expected from Tylite.
Absolutely. I think that sometimes that it's hard because, you know, we're looking for that solution. I'm not going to get into a whole discussion on ISO standards. We could absolutely do that. But Brian did a podcast, I think season one, with Kara Copeland. And we talked a lot about the Rojo standards. Kara Copeland, arguably one of the best in the game when it comes to international standards, as far as knowing that goes. And I think it's something that as a consumer, I'll be honest with you, I take for granted. Even some of the consumer products, you just forget that they're international standards for a reason. So for sure. So I'm glad you felt comfortable enough to shed some light on that, because I think that sometimes throws people off a little bit as far as like, what is the advantage or disadvantage to working, you know, with they're absolutely, once again, there's absolutely not anything that we are saying is horrendous by people who create, you know, an N of one, you know, one specific one, but, you know, ensuring the safety, the checks and balances, we can't speak for any other company except for the standards that Tylite has. So
yeah.
I'll put that down for a minute. Hawken, what you got?
Yeah. I'm curious about, you're talking about some of the designs you receive or customer requests. Mm-hmm. And obviously I'm sure you've had a lot over this 25 year period. Mm-hmm. Have there been one or a couple unique configurations you wouldn't have expected to be receiving that you can think of?
One that sticks out in my head that's rather recent is we did a single abducted frame where the front was off to the side and the other side was just straight on, because we were accommodating a brace that was for this kiddo. And what was neat about that is we were basically able to make two hemispheres of a chair where the casters were dead center to the rear wheel, but the front of the frame was actually sticking out on one side versus the other side. So that chair was going to perform just like any other manual wheelchair. In fact, it would go straight. It wouldn't have any outriggers that were dragging it that way. And this crew in the back, they're like, yeah, we'll do that for you. We'll knock it out in a hurry. And it's like, cool. And they did. I had another one made just so that I have it. And I actually go around the country sometimes with that. And when people, I hear, well, I hear you guys don't do customs, I pull that out and say, well, you know, let me tell you a story. I mean, that's really cool. And I love, especially when we can help the kiddos make sure that they're taken care of. But also we did one out of a VA, and it was a person who, you know, was a torso and arms, really big, muscly guy, but he was having troubles with his chair tipping out of it. And we have a, what they call a CMD3, or it's an all-terrain chair. We use some elements of that chair to create him a frame where his casters were forward facing, because he was sitting so high because of the prosthesis he was in. We wanted to be able to get him a little bit lower. So, you know, his vertical state, center of gravity was closer to his camera tube. And so we did a drop seat and we did forward facing casters, and we did a sixth wheel in the back. And for a long time, he was a ice hockey player. And for a long time, he, couldn't travel with his team, with his sled hockey team, because he couldn't take his other chair out and about because he was afraid he's going to tip over. So, you know, he was using his power chair, which couldn't go with his team because it's really hard to ship such a thing as you're traveling. And I'll tell you, we went back and forth on that a couple dozen times trying to find the exact setup. And I wasn't there when it was delivered, but the comment was made and there was a video. He said, look, this feels organic. This feels like it was made for me. And, you know, yeah, we're doing made to measure all the time, but this was an extreme case where it was like, we rang all the bells for that. Mm-hmm. And again, we just produced it. The idea and the design actually came from the clinician, the sales rep, and the end user themselves. And we said, yeah, okay, we can do that. How about this? Oh yeah, this getting down. So he went from a 27-inch rear wheel down to a 25-inch wheel, and he was able to actually engage a proper propulsion area for his hand rim, where before he was just getting maybe an eighth of it because he was sitting so high. So those two things stick out in my mind where we're doing whole chairs. But you know, there's so many little components that we do that, you know, like a weighted footrest. People want a weighted footrest, so again, they can access their hand rims. And so they say, look, you know, I have these lightweight prosthesis, and I just don't want my wheels behind my back. I want them actually underneath me so I can actually push and save my shoulder and be out and about and not flip over. And so, cool, let's do that. Back in the old days, we used to melt lead and put them down inside the tubes. This nowadays, what we can do is we can dial it into a pound of what they want. So 5 pounds up to 20 pounds, whatever you would like between there. What do you need? All right, good. Let us create that weighted footrest that is not leaded and actually could be adjusted later on. If you wanted to, you change your plates out and your weights out. And okay, I went from 15 down to 12 because, you know, I'm not carrying my book bag anymore. So those are things that those little things are you don't think make that big of a deal, and you can't really tell that it's on the chair. But knowing that person is being able to get out and about and not risk bonking their head against the ground is a huge deal to us. So, and I know I'm rambling. I get it.
You're good. Boy, you're good.
This is so much fun.
It is. Well, it sparked a question in me. So I think you guys know that by undergrad, I'm a recreation therapist. So I always think about, like, what are some of the cool things that maybe, I mean, I know for funding, we have to think medically necessary, but are there any examples of, like, random, not medically necessary, like, accessories that people reached out to be like, can you add, I want to be able to do X, Y, Z in my chair. Can you add something on? Is there anything jump out at you?
I mean, a cup holder, and it was a specific cup holder, where instead of using like a strapped on or a clamped on setup, he just wanted rib nuts to put this cup holder on. And he wanted it rotated slightly inward so it wouldn't get caught on anything. And it's like, yeah, we can do that. I had to present it though to make sure that it, you know, fit within our 510K and our engineering and so forth. And once we did that, it was like, cool, yeah, we can do that. And the person was ecstatic. And it's like, cool, here's your cup holder. We don't think about that sometimes, but that's a big deal, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
you know, I wedge myself into every wheelchair I can fit into. And I tell you, I can't have a drink with me because I don't have much of a lap, number one. But number two, you know, when I'm pushing, you know, I'm able-bodied, so my legs move and so forth. I will drop my drink from my knees to the floor and I won't have my drink anymore. It's a big deal to be able to have your hydrations with you as you're going.
Absolutely. Okay. So now another clinical question for me. I've got two. So Hall can buckle up. First question would be, have you, in your position, I'm sure you hear this a lot, you know, the $1 million question, literally, of how does this stuff get paid for? Right. Is that a concern? Does it come across your plate? So if a clinician is listening to this, or somebody who, you know, is looking for a truly, you know, made to their specific needs wheelchair, how does the funding work with this? Any thoughts?
That's a good question. We try to keep it minimal in pricing. Mm-hmm. We don't think of cost when we do this, other than, hey, look, let's not make it ungodly expensive for the end user. However, if they're asking for it, they have a way to fund this. Is our mindset. So we don't let the money get in the way of these ideas. And so we kind of ignore it. I hate to say that. But however, there have been some people out there that can justify it and say, look, I need this because this, this, and this. And because it was written so well, it gets paid for. Again, I'm kind of removed from that end of the business, because if I worry about the money all the time, I won't be able to, you know, lead the group into providing what's actually needed. We want to provide that. Yeah. So forgive me for not really answering that.
But. No, it's totally, it's a totally fair answer. And I think if I think there has to be an equal balance of folks who are really tied in and looped in to the finances part of it. I remember, I mean, this was decades ago, because I know that inpatient facilities now differ a lot, but I remember asking a rehab director one day something about like reimbursement, and her response was, that's not for you to worry about. You're worried about getting the client going. Like, we'll figure all the other stuff out. And I know that that has changed a lot in the 20, like, I've been doing what I've been doing for 25 years, like you can, and you and I can tell there's been a lot of things have changed. You know, when I teach clinical education, or used to teach clinical education, I'd often refer to, we have to talk about the F word of CRT, which is funding. So we will talk about that. But another question that pops up, because I think about, you know, being back in clinics, how long does this take from like when the idea is presented to you guys? You know, how long is the back and forth process? And I know it can vary depending on what the person needs, but like on average, what's the process from a napkin drawing submission to you all the way to the client is in it, able to try it?
You know, that is a huge, huge variable. So I can tell you right now, if we talk about our sled hockey player, that took months and months and months, just because it needed to be right. And once we had it right, each custom that was on that chair, because there were various customs throughout, all took, you know, let's say 5 days here, 7 days here, where we had to work on those things. And I think that pushed that from the time the order hit until it was out, I think we were 45 business days, just because we wanted to get all those rang onto it. Other than that, let's say they want to put a padded armrest on a swing away. I mean, there's really no time at all. We just say, okay, yeah, we'll drill the holes and get that out to you. So that's more of a standard turnaround time, what tie light non-custom or non-creative mobility stuff goes. So, you know, it's really hard to answer how that goes. I can tell you that our all-terrain chairs will take 30 days, are more heavy-duty type. Hey, look, we're going to make this a weekend warrior chair for basketball, tennis, whatever it is. If we're going to do that, I mean, it could take maybe 90 days, just because we want to make sure that we ring all the bells. Very seldom is that long. However, people seem to be happy. It's like, okay, yeah, that's not a problem. Just get it to us, because they know once they get it, it's going to be exactly what they were talking about. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
I wanted to learn more about this process from when you get in touch with a client to building the chair. You mentioned in one of the blog posts you wrote about you, how you keep a notebook by your bed when ideas come to you when you wake up in the middle of the night. So I'm curious, like the ideation process. You also talked about a brain trust kind of meeting that you have. I'm curious about how all that works.
You know, and that's the whole thing, is that there's sometimes I'm asked a question and I don't know how we're going to achieve it. You know, can you do X, Y, or Z? And I find that during sleep, I give my best answers. I will dream of stuff. And it's my wife thinks I'm nuts because this is what makes me a wheelchair nerd, is that I will wake up in the middle of the night and I will either write down my thoughts so that I run it by this group, or I will message myself, you know, and hey, Ken, don't forget this and this, because when I wake up the next morning, it's not always there. It's not, okay, it seemed really sharp last night. Now I'm a little foggy as to what it was. On top of that, I fix wheelchairs in my sleep. My kids walk in and I'll be asleep and I'll have my hands above my head. setting an axle, let's say. And they, you know, they say, Ken, you're dad, you're such a nerd. And say, yeah, I am. And that's what makes me that wheelchair nerd. Is I'm always, mm-hmm. always thinking, okay, is there a better way to do this? Then from there, I come and I say, hey, look, here's the idea. But what's beautiful about that, when we get into what we call an adaptations meeting every Wednesday, and we're talking about these things, they will have their own epiphanies where they're like, hey, that's a good start. That's a good foundation. However, what if we, and that's where that brain trust comes from, is that adaptations committee that we get together. And not only are they there to approve something, but they're there to add to the idea of, hey, look, you know, we can sign off on this, but what if? And it's like, I love the what ifs. Mm-hmm. That is where that innovation really gets legs and moves forward. We still have to prove it with the customer, but by the same token, we've come up with some stuff that might not work for that particular customer. However, we have that in the background, so that when the next customer comes along and asks for something similar, we can say, hey, let me get this shiny thing out and show you what we were thinking. What do you think? That's what we're doing. My guy Brian out here at Designs, he's also a wheelchair nerd, and he does the same thing. He's just sitting there going, wow, what if we could? And then there's these, and then, you know, we just sit there and we get excited and we start giggling, because it's so much fun and it's so much excitement surrounding a solution that maybe no one's thought of before. Maybe they have, but we didn't. And so it was a pretty big deal to us. So, mm-hmm. That's where that brain trust comes from. It's not just approval. It's, hey, give us input. So
what are some of this? We've talked about the functional things.
Yeah.
What are some of the really cool aesthetic things that you guys can do? Cause I know that, I mean, one of a long time friend, and now we have the cutest picture ever of you, of her daughter hugging you, Chelsea Hill. And we all know, Chelsea has always been the epitome of fashion, the epitome, mm-hmm. you know, of just really, you know, looking great and wanting to customize mm-hmm. her chair for a specific look. Mm-hmm. And what are some of the cool things that you guys can do that people might not think of or have thought of or realize that CMD can do or Tylight can do?
Yeah. I mean, Tylight, people forget about polished, you know, and Chelsea absolutely needs to have her chair polished. And so not only does the chair get polished, but also the side guards themselves are a polished stainless. And so uh-huh. we put that all on the chair and it reflects what she is. I mean, I can recognize people basically from the elbows down by what their chair is, how they're sitting and so forth, just because they have a certain aesthetic that they would like to do. So what we did on that chair is she wanted to have white anodize on her casters. Well, casters can't be anodized white. It's a, you know, a fork is, you know, either silver or it's going to be black or maybe some other color, but can't just be white. Right? So we knocked out the bearings and we pulled out everything we needed to, degreased it, and we powder coated it white and then put everything back together going, okay, you have your white forks. Things like that is what I think of. Upholstery, something that's, one of our unsung heroes here at Tylight is the upholstery department. They have some amazing designs that they have done, not only with the aesthetics, but also functionality. But, you know, they want an embroidery put on something. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's embroider your name across there. You want to have digital camo. What color? Blue, gray, sand? You know, whatever the you know, that is, they'll sew that right in and make it part of that chair. And so, those are things that we starve for, because there's mm-hmm. aesthetics that we never think of that, you know, we want to achieve. We do water jet cut-ins to footrests. I did a badminton chair once and we put a little birdie on the footrest. So it was a, nice. The shuttlecock was on the footrest itself. We made a doggy for one person. We did a U.S. Marine Corps side guard cutout. Right now we're doing a seat pan that has the Tylight logo in the seat pan, and it's backed with the color of the chair. So the sides are a blue And so that when you pull off your seat sling, you look down and you have your black seat pan, but with a blue backer. So it looks cool. And someone just wants to show that. And it's like, cool, yeah. let's have it. We have a water jet out here. Let's go nuts, you know? And mm-hmm. so, again, back to the designers, they do a quick draw up of what it is. And they send that to the back. The guys program it in the machine and throw the metal in there and push go. And next thing I know, we have this beautiful outcome. So, and that's what I want to say is that the team here is what mm-hmm. makes this happen. I'm just facilitating things as we go. Mm-hmm. just a little bit of experience that I throw into it, but again, back to that snowball of ideas and mm-hmm. the snowball of experience is where a lot of those good looking things come from. So, yeah.
I am curious about, you know, mentioned the team. How many people would you say are working on CMD, if you could answer, and like about how many chairs do you work on?
CMD alone, about almost a half of what our chairs are that we're running up in Vasco have some kind of adaptation affected to it added to it. And I can tell you that we have three stages of CMDs. We have what they call a tier one, where it's something that is unique, but it can go down just the regular process line. We have a tier two CMD where it goes down partially down a process value stream, then it bounces off into a specialty, let's say a machining group or a finishing group, and then it bounces right back in and then finishes the rest of the way in that value stream. And then we have a tier three where we don't want to throw that in the middle of the value stream because it will shut down everything behind it. So we just take that and we put that off the side. And we have a group called the CFS group, or the Custom Fabrication Services group, and they will take that off to the side and they will build that. And then we have master builders in assembly who will take that off to the side, not throw that down our assembly line, but we'll build that chair from the ground up and say, okay, here, this is that. So everybody touches a CMD here in Pasco. Everybody has some kind of finger on it. It doesn't matter if you're in customer experience or if you're packaging the chair. You have some kind of contribution to this whole program that that we've developed. So.
Very cool. Right. I know we've talked a lot about CMD, and I think before we wrap up the podcast, mm-hmm. being the expert that you are, when it comes to manual wheelchairs, I think we'd be remiss mm-hmm. if we didn't ask if you were speaking directly to clinicians or end users out there. What are, say, your top three pieces of advice for maintaining a manual wheelchair? Because I know you see a lot in the repair booth. What would you have to advise people do on how to take care of their manual wheelchairs?
You know, I ride lots of motorcycles. I absolutely love motorcycles. And I kind of think of wheelchairs in that regard. Got to keep them clean. You do. Mm-hmm. You know, as you're cleaning your chair, you're going to find anything that's kind of weird or out of spec. Your bearings, beware your bearings. Bearings you will wear out, and you should probably change them before it gets to that point. If you're using WD-40 to keep a wheel rolling, let's get those bearings changed out. Keep the hair out of there. You know, hair will eat anything alive, whether it be bearings or even I've seen grooves put into caster forks from just mm-hmm. hair being inside of there. Keep your casters square. If you have a caster that can be squared, check it every once in a while. People will change rear wheels and not realize that their casters are all of a sudden slightly out of square. Save those shoulders. Don't always come out of a hole. Make sure that you're spinning on that same plane, no matter where that caster swivels to. And I guess make sure your foot plate's level. I can't tell you how many chairs come to me And I absolutely love working on chairs because I learn so much when I'm working on chairs. But when chairs, you know, they're tracking weird or they're floating or whatever the case might be. And all it is the foot plate is cockeyed. And just make sure that foot plate is level to your camber tube. And if you have that level to the camber tube, chances are that float or flutter or whatever you're dealing with will go away really quick. And finally, check your bolts, you know, doesn't take many tools, you know, have a metric L wrench set, have a metric open end wrench set, and you'll be able to take care of 90% of what you need to on that chair. Those are the things that I would say. I'm sure I'm missing something, but I'm just thinking about what I see when people come to, you know, the shows and we work on it. Those are things like, I can't believe you've been riding on, you know, one bearing for, you know, 3 months and this fixed that for you. So those are the things that come to mind right off.
The good news is for folks who are listening, if you have other questions, you can always message us because I can always tap Ken to either make us a video or something. One day we might do some content on that. We've had people who've asked us for some basic like maintenance tips and stuff. So super important.
There's just a few questions that we like to ask our guests. I'll make it more tailored to manual wheelchairs because that's your thing. But if there's one piece of complex, or I would say a wheelchair accessory, a part of a wheelchair that is a little bit underrated or misunderstood, what would you say that is?
I guess I go back to the footrest. You know, that footrest has such a bearing on where your casters are going to be. If it's too wide, let's say you have an angle adjustable foot plate and it's been, you know, spoiled out for whatever reason, or too narrow for that matter, your casters follow that. So your footrest is a foundation to how your chair is going to perform. So if that's locked in, everything else is simple. I can tell you that I'm going to go a little bit outside the box here. When a chair is floating, it's probably 97% chance, and I did the math once, that it's not the chair that's bent. It is the assembly that's holding the chair that's off. And you can adjust that out. So trust in the assembly of that chair to hold it, and trust that your frame is square. We early days of Tylite, we would get chairs back, say, no, the frame's bent, and we would adjust it a little bit, and all of a sudden all four were on the ground, but we've already replaced the chair. It's like, you know what, we're going to come up with some quick ways to fix these in the field. So we have now troubleshooting for that. But trust that your frame is square. Especially here at Tylite, I can't speak to other manufacturers, but I can tell you we spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on just a single fixture to hold that chair dead on. And so I trust that fixture, that it's been welded, that chair has been welded in that fixture, and that I can trust that whatever I do with the assembly, that frame wants to be square to the ground. So I think that's what it is. The frame is underrated. People don't realize how truly square they are when they come out of that weld fixture.
Right. So if you could wave a magic wand and fix one thing in this manual wheelchair industry, what would it be?
You got to fund the titanium. Titanium is so malleable. People don't realize how customized you can make titanium when people are asking for something unique. If we really want to take care of people who are in wheelchairs, we need to be able to have that funded through insurances, through Medicare, Medicaid, whatever the case might be. That has to be part of it because we're shortchanging folks as to how they can propel in a wheelchair and how they can live their daily lives by not having that available to them. It breaks my heart when people say, hey, you know, I'm going to have to go with an aluminum chair. And I know you guys can't do these customs on it, but, you know, it's It's what my funding will allow. It's heartbreaking because we know they can sit in a better mm-hmm. situation. We know they can propel in a better way. We know they'll be safer in a unique setup. So that's the magic wand I would wave right now. And I would, yeah, if any politicians are listening in, please, you know, push that House bill that's being considered right now. We would love to have that titanium available to people who use manual wheelchairs.
Yeah, and for those of you who are listening who aren't sure about that bill, it was introduced this year. It's been introduced to previous years as well, but it would basically allow people to pay for that titanium upgrade without having to pay for the whole chair itself. So who is one person in this wheelchair world, other than you, for a lot of people, that inspires you?
Well, I'm going to have to go way back. A guy named Marty Ball. He was absolutely, I know Marty. Love Marty. Mm-hmm. He,
good dude.
I learned so much from him as a young person in this industry. We get stuck in airports, and he'd say, "Hey Ken, let's do this." And we would set up the wheelchair in different configurations, and say, "Now look how this affects how my chair goes." Now Marty was a racer. He was a pioneer of the marathons, wheelchair marathon. And he knew so much about hand rim engagement, tracking, what he wanted specifically, but what other folks also wanted. So he could think outside himself and say, well, if let's say I am a spinal bifida person, mm-hmm. I would want this, this, and this. If I had MS and it was progressing, I would need to consider these things. He was thinking beyond just himself, and thinking beyond, hey, look, for this setup, for this day, I would like my chair to do this. And then we could change it the next day so it would do another thing. For instance, there was times that we were going to be out and about. We were going to be on asphalt, and there was going to be a crown in the road. He says, look, I want my casters so that they're loose enough where I point, they're going to stay, and I'm going to push. But then when we're just tootling around somewhere, he wants them so they are easy to spin. And if he wants to just barely touch one of his hand rims, he can turn left. He can turn right. It was eye-opening to me. And I guess that, you know, going back to just way before times, he's one that really speaks to me. There's many others, don't get me wrong, but he was the one that took time you know, he didn't mind I was able-bodied or anything like that. He was like, Ken, you need to know this because you're going to help people. You're going to help people. And this is how you're going to do it. And it's like, cool. So anyway, great mentor. Great knowledge that he bestowed.
And finally, what mm-hmm. is one feature or design improvement you like to see in the next generations of manual wheelchairs?
Yeah, let's see. So many things, guys. I mean, I sit here and I think of things that we've turned out. Okay. There was a bulldog chair that we messed with a little bit, and it was great for pediatrics. It was. And I think about a tricycle chair that we made once where the person says, look, it's going to be a trike. And that was a lot of fun, but you know, it didn't, you know, there's 80 pages that you have to do this decision tree. Does it fit within the 510K that you're calling this chair? And if it doesn't ring all the bells in those 80 plus pages, then you have to say no. And so I think moving forward, I would absolutely love to push that envelope and then actually create a new chair model that no one's ever seen before, that would just turn the whole thing on its ear. I mean, let's be honest. I'd like to go nuts on a couple things right now. I just can't, you know. So I'm just trying to keep myself out of trouble right now. So that's all I'm going to say.
Okay, that's fair.
Fair enough. Mm. Fair enough. Well, Ken, always so much fun to talk to you about wheelchairs and just about life in general. As I said, I'm looking forward to seeing you this weekend, hanging out, and really diving into more related to wheelchairs. I know you're a wheelchair nerd at heart, and you know you live that. So thank you so much for being on the podcast. I know we're going to reach out to you again about more stuff, and yeah, it's been great.
Oh, wonderful. Hey, thanks, guys. And thank you, you wheelchair nerds that are listening. I appreciate you guys. Let me spend time with you. And Hawken, Angie, appreciate you guys. And this is a lot of fun. Thank you.
Awesome.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for checking out this episode. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single one. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is @wheelchairnerds. And tell your friends about our podcast, too. Oh, and we really appreciate it if you give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment sharing what your favorite thing about Wheelchair Nerds is. Last but not least, if you have a topic you'd like us to discuss or know a great guest, hey, it could even be you. You could be that next great guest. Send us an email. Tell us why. You can reach us at wheelchairnerds@permobile.com or DM us on one of our social platforms. We love hearing from you.